a trusted voice of truth and light.
God gave me a gift. I shovel well. I shovel very well.
And a rally point for those who've accepted the reality that they are not sheep.
We've got a blind date with destiny.
And it looks like she's ordered the lobster.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Well, hello there, my fellow wrong thinker. Pull up a chair. Make yourself comfortable. We got some great stuff to share in this hour of the show. And our program is made possible by great sponsors, including MonticelloCollege.org, GovernYourIncome.com, SewingAndQuiltingCenter.com, HSLAmmo.com, the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage, as well as LifesavingFood.com. I have never heard the phrase before of a Jezebel spirit. Now, I've heard of the story of Jezebel from the Old Testament. I've heard people, you know, say it sometimes, you know, and calling someone out, you're a Jezebel. But I would never have understood what that meant had I not read Alan Stevo's latest comment, or his latest column, rather, about how Jezebel spirits thrive when there is no one willing to stand. And since one of the focuses of this show is to try to persuade you, my fellow wrong thinker, to have the courage to stand. Not necessarily to stand down the corner, you know, with a megaphone, you know, standing boldly so that everyone can throw garbage at you as they drive by, but just knowing that you have the courage and the clarity of your convictions, that when it's your principles at stake, you can stand courageously. Even if you have to stand alone, even if your voice shakes, you can do it. So if you've ever wondered why your courage is needed now, more than ever, this is a terrific read. Alan Stevo says, on a recent flight from Tampa to Atlanta, a woman got in the face of another passenger and yelled at him for not having a mask on. Now, he said he was eating and would not be putting it on. This mask Nazi ultimately struck him in the face and spit on him. Now, he remained seated and stood his ground verbally, though he unfortunately rolled in the proverbial mud a little, especially when he descended into using foul language with her. This woman, later identified as Patricia Cornwall, was taken with a spirit of control, a Jezebel spirit, as some people describe it. And this is true of many people who support the health mandates. In the Bible, Jezebel was the wicked wife of King Ahab. She was allowed to thrive in her wickedness. Now, Alan Stevo says, I have often asked readers to ignore the more sheep-like people, such as your triple-masked neighbor. They spook easily, have little along the way of a moral guidestone, have existed in all times, and are not the variable. He says, I've previously asked readers to ignore the hyenas, such as the well-paid people growing even more well-paid due to the health mandates they helped implement. They are the true terrorists. The enemies, foreign and domestic, with the domestic form of this terrorism being the more meaningful version. Though their evil can astound in its depravity, they too are a mere distraction. They've existed in all periods of time and are not the variable. He says it's the lion who deserves your attention. The trajectory of all history depends upon them, those lions who stay asleep or who awake. A woken lion will exude freedom by the very nature of his walk through the world. His actions may be unpredictable and hard to coordinate, but they will be actions that nonetheless exude freedom. This can frustrate a collectivist committed to organizing lions and unfamiliar with what it's like to interact with a truly free man. A lion cannot even prevent himself from exuding freedom if he tries. It is the natural consequence of his walk through life. And Alan Stevo says, in a time like this, the objective of the free man then is to awaken as many lions as he can. Time spent focused on hyenas and sheep is often a distraction and a waste of time of one's personal resources, like time and energy, perhaps being the most valuable among those resources. So let's go back to the story of Jezebel and how it turned out for her. To return to the Bible and the antagonist of this essay, he says the story of Jezebel finally ends when Jehu comes to her home and calls on her servants, a group of eunuchs, to throw her down. Yes, Jehu literally wants them to defenestrate Jezebel from the palace. They proverbially regain their manhood by doing exactly that. Jezebel dies. Jehu tramples her with his horse. Jehu goes for lunch, and sometime later he sends people to clean up Jezebel's remains. By that time, Jezebel's remains had been devoured by dogs. Now, though the eunuchs threw her down to her death, a bold act, Alan Stevo says, I wonder if they could have had the decency to simply stand up to her civilly, look her in the face, and tell her no. That is the truly bold behavior. That's the behavior that would have prevented the wicked reign of Jezebel and may even have prevented her ultimate death. It is the behavior that was needed from her husband, an intact man who was less of a man in the story than even the eunuchs. Killing someone is the comparatively easy way out, perhaps even in a total act of cowardice when it's committed against a person you do not have the guts to stand up to face to face. Now, there could be consequences of doing that rather than killing Jezebel. It might even be foolhardy knowing the many consequences that had befallen others trying to do the same. The honest, bold, face-to-face conversation is often the brave thing to do, and often absent in the life of so many who feel the boot of tyranny. Now here he asks the question, is Jezebel really to blame? Jezebel has an awful reputation that has lasted the test of time. While it's common to blame Jezebel in the story, there's an often overlooked detail. Jezebel would be unable to have such power and influence without her weak-willed husband, King Ahab. He is truly the problem in the story. Ahab is the one that enables the Jezebel spirit rather than commanding authority over it. He does not do the difficult work of leading his household to do righteously. Instead, he empowers the wickedness of his household. Now, what if Jezebel and Ahab had a child? See, later in the Bible, there's more trouble caused by the seed of Ahab. Having watched her mother and father interact with each other in such a way, their daughter, Athaliah, behaves similarly in the presence of a weak man who empowers her. The Jezebel spirit thrives in the presence of weak men. There's the takeaway line right there. This is understandable. Nature abhors a vacuum. Power rushes to fill the empty space. Like that era of societal decay in which Jezebel and Ahab lived, this contemporary era is also an era in which those two spirits thrive. The Jezebel spirit, which is a spirit of control, and the Ahab spirit, which is a spirit of weakness. Now, these are not necessarily gendered roles. A man can be taken with a Jezebel spirit. A woman can be taken with an Ahab spirit. Generally, they are gendered, though. So the basic tenets of adulthood are where we are called to identify our boundaries, communicate our boundaries, and defend our boundaries. Similarly, we are called to identify our values, communicate our values, and defend our values. Now, if you can't do that, you are not a fully functioning adult. Such weakness is intolerable and leads to great evil in your life. The Ahab spirit is not he who does evil himself, though King Ahab did great evil. The Ahab spirit is that which is weak in the face of evil, thereby allowing, accommodating, and enabling evil. It's an evil of omission, not an evil of commission. It is a lack of responsibility for a situation in which a man is expected to take responsibility. Now, the career bureaucrats at all levels of government recognize the existence of such weaknesses and feed their power and control by feeding into the Ahab spirit of elected officials. This is true in the White House, where a senile, unelected grifter is the figurehead, incapable of managing his way through a press conference, let alone manage the officials under his supervision. This is also true down to the school board, where bureaucrats distract officials with mounds of meaningless paperwork while ushering through meaningful votes quietly, usually without being noticed by the elected official, and certainly always without opposition. It's exactly how some bureaucrats run the show unchecked for decades, while the elected official is made into a mere rubber stamp and occasionally a scapegoat, with the public never able to figure out why nothing changes for the better, no matter who they elect. And a lot of leaders are just like Ahab, which means the Jezebel spirit thrives. So Alan Stevo says, while the Ahab spirit endemic in this era of weak men, or with that endemic in this era of weak men, he says it's virtually impossible to find a man in a position of authority not taken with this complacent weakness. Such a man is very unlikely to accept responsibility, is perpetually obsessed not only with longevity, but with longevity of career, and is often spoken of as a true leader. He's the opposite of a leader. He is little more than frivolity and vanity incarnate. It's very difficult to find any male in a position of governmental authority who is not taken with an Ahab spirit. Great effort is taken to make it seem otherwise. Boy, does that not sound like some of the leaders that he's describing? Some of our leaders, rather? He says the Jezebel spirit can only thrive in the presence of an Ahab spirit. Anyone with a sense of authority in his life and who demands responsibility for what's taking place around himself does not let a Jezebel spirit thrive. We're going to come back to this in a few moments. I hope it doesn't seem too much like a Sunday school lesson, but this seems very relevant.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Just a quick shout out here for sewingandquiltingcenter.com. This is a wonderful family-owned business located in St. George, Utah. And, you know, even if you're a manly man who really isn't into sewing or embroidery or long-arm quilting, I bet you know somebody who does thrive on creating. And this, it's a very, very viable pastime and hobby, as well as a pretty good way to be more self-reliant. I mean, come on, if you can fix, or for that matter, fabricate your own clothing, that's a pretty cool skill to have, something that may actually come in handier in the days ahead. Bottom line, though, is this. You're looking for a one-stop shop that will get you not only the machines that you need, and I'm talking Brother, Baby Lock, and Genome, but also free classes to go along with those machines. Meaning when you buy a long-arm quilting machine, for instance, from Sewing and Quilting Center in St. George, Utah, you have the ability to go take classes. And those classes never expire. All of their machine classes can be taken again if you forget or if you just want a refresher course. Now, they're offering some specials through the month of January. That's going quickly, so you probably should jump on this sooner than later. And if you live in Washington County, they'll even offer free delivery on all products purchased off their website. If you live in Mesquite or Cedar, they say, give us a call. We'll work something out. Anyway, I appreciate having them as sponsors. There are links in my show notes under my sponsors that will get you connected with Sewing and Quilting Center in St. George, Utah. So back to this article by Alan Stevo. Jezebel spirits thrive when there is no one willing to stand. And if you understand the Jezebel spirit as that spirit of control, that need to control others, and it thrives in the presence of the Ahab spirit, her husband, the wicked king Ahab, who was too weak to stand up to her controlling nature. Now here's where it gets really interesting. Let's translate that Old Testament story into more current parlance. Alan Stevo says the contemporary term, or at least one contemporary term, for the Jezebel spirit is Karen. The man on the aforementioned flight, after being smacked in the face, commented, "Sit down, Karen, you're going to jail." Now, a Karen is a person of any age, race, or gender who seeks to control another person, usually by attempting to report that person to authority. Though imperfect, the term Karen is a truly telling and informative term from our era, and it must not be easily dismissed for any of its foibles. Alan Stevo says it's one of the rare instances of our popular culture providing ancient and useful wisdom organically, even in our morally corrupt and intellectually impoverished setting. Karen is in several meaningful ways the contemporary equivalent of Jezebel. In a spirit of distraction and confusion, some have taken to make Karen mean any middle-aged white woman that you don't like. That's not the case. There is no race, gender, or age requirement associated with this term. That Karen spirit can appear in anyone just as a Jezebel spirit can exist in anyone. Now, Ahabs have always hated taking responsibility, or why it's not your oppressor's fault that you are so oppressible. Alan Stevo says, you know, it's been said, it's not your oppressor's fault that you're so oppressible. He says, I tend to agree with that sentiment, at least in my own life. He says, I find it a very helpful approach to take. It's up to you to decide if it's fitting for your own life as well. For instance, he says, I seldom let anyone complain to me for more than a few seconds about how oppressed he is in life without pointing out the Ahab spirit that he welcomes into his life, which makes being oppressed by another almost a guarantee. Yes, he says, I tend to find that it is not your oppressor's fault that you are so oppressible. He says, If I mention how many divorced dads I've had to say this to, I may get a flurry of angry emails because Ahab never seems to want to take responsibility. This era needs a lot less Ahab and a lot more take charge Jehu, figuratively speaking rather, or else this era, marked by a preponderance of Jezebel and Ahab spirits, will be supremely weak, unhinged, and a wicked era that we pass on to the next generation. And here he pivots into face masks, saying one reason that face masks are so important is that they push the boundaries on acceptable behavior and permissible oppression. They train those who wear them for further oppression. And they also signal to the oppressors that those who wear them are ready for further oppression. Whew. I mean, that's direct, but I think he's right. He says a host of other sociological activities take place that I will not now get into, but which I write about at length in my books, Face Masks Hurt Kids and Face Masks in One Lesson. This is to say that a face mask is much more than a face mask. It's much more than an attempt to stop the spread of a disease. The disease prevention claim, by the way, has been unequivocally disproven at this point. Face masks, in fact, hurt you. Face masks are harmful both for those who wear them and those who allow them worn around themselves. Now, Alan Stevo says, my experience has been that those who refuse to say no to the face masks every single time are those who will take the COVID shot. They've just not heard the right reason yet. Every time they put the face mask on, it's training and preparation for them to take the shot. In fact, taking the shot is far easier. It literally takes only 10 seconds of weakness, and in some cases, the shot produces a lifetime of regret. You are paving the way for that and worse every time you put on a face mask. Saying no to the face mask every time is of fundamental importance and reverberates into other areas of life. The Jezebel spirit wants you to mask up, wants you to take the shot, wants you to comply to much worse. The Jezebel spirit has no boundaries on anything. As she says, just this one last thing, and never stops coming up with that one last thing, because she never meets resistance. Alan Stevo finishes up by noting that Jezebel spirits thrive in our era. That is precisely because Ahab spirits thrive in our era. Such a moral a vacuum of moral authority is all a Jezebel spirit needs to thrive. It's the job of the upright, mighty man of valor, the job of the upright, virtuous woman to say no to these spirits and to take authority over them. Now, that may not change the world overnight, but one step at a time, taking authority over that spirit of control in your own life will change the world as you know it. The simplest and most meaningful step in making that happen is by saying no to the face mask. Not just once, not just sometimes, but each and every time. And he asks, who will you be? An Ahab, a Jezebel, or a Jehu? No need to answer that question verbally, says everyone knows the answer by seeing the face mask choices you make. The choice is all yours. I really like his take on this, and I think this is one of those great applications of biblical knowledge. I think there's a terrific lesson to be learned here. I want to go back for a moment, though, to something he started with, and that is the idea that there are sheep, there are hyenas, and there are lions. Now, maybe I'm just deluding myself, but in my heart, I believe that this program is one of those efforts of many, you know, like many people are doing right now, to awaken the lions among us. In fact, I'm going to just come right out and say what I'm thinking. You are a lion, whether you see yourself as one or not. It's who you are. You couldn't stand to listen to this program. It would repel you if you were a hyena. It would frighten you if you were a sheep. Oh, they'll turn that off. I don't want to hear this. But something that Alan Stievel points out here is, if you are a lion, you will exude freedom by the very nature of your walk through the world. And that doesn't mean that you're going out there and you're imposing this on everybody. It just simply means people will know at a glance when they look at you. They will understand within seconds of opening their mouth to speak with you that you are a lion. And lions, in my opinion, are super spreaders of the kind of pandemic that we really need most at this time. And that is a pandemic of courage. So, walk like a lion through your life and courageously spread that courage everywhere you go. You won't even know the people that you're infecting with it, but they'll recognize it and they'll be better for having contracted that courage from you.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Welcome back to the show. Thanks again for being part of our growing audience of wrong thinkers. If you'd like to subscribe to my show notes, it's a very simple thing. Just click on the subscribe button, which you will find at thebrianhydeshow.com. Now, it's going to ask you for your email, and I want to give you my assurance. I do not share your email. I do not sell your email to anybody else. Yes, I am compiling a list of subscribers, but it is for the purpose of when I hit publish on my show notes, which I do every single day that I do this program, it will send a copy of those show notes to you. And I'm not going to say that my show notes are what's going to make all of your dreams come true. But just know that I spend the better part of my waking hours looking for good, credible, principled information, things that will inspire you to live up to the difference that you were born to make in this world. So if you're looking for somewhere to go to be angry or to be told who or what you should fear or hate, I'm not your guy. Sorry. That's okay. You know, I mean, if we're not cut out, you know, for the same message here, that's fine. I'm not going to look down on you. You're free to go and find, you know, what you're looking for. But for those who are serious about making a difference, this is what I try to help them do in my own small way. And I count it as a huge privilege to be able to do this. So thanks to those of you who subscribe. Again, go to thebrianhydeshow.com. I'll be happy to put you on the list and send a copy of those notes to you each day. So we talked about face masks with the Alan Stievel commentary, and I look back over the last couple of years now, and I just think it's absolutely fascinating how mask mandates have become one of the primary battlegrounds between the folks who want to control others and the rest of us. And I think one of the places we've seen this play out the most has been in educational settings, whether it's higher education or whether it's, you know, school boards. I know there's been a big battle going back and forth in, for instance, Salt Lake City, Utah, where the mayor is like, well, I have to protect people, so I'm putting a mask mandate in place. These are just people trying to flex and use their power to show I still have control. And people of a controlling nature applaud that. Yes, yes, you're protecting us. You're doing the right thing by making everyone wear a mask possible. And when the legislature, the Utah legislature, says, hey, we're voting down these mask mandates, or we're voting to put an end to these mask mandates, that doesn't mean that they're voting nobody may wear a mask anymore. It just simply means that you're free to choose if you want to, but you can't compel others to do it. And this is really concerning for those with a controlling nature. Oh, they can't do that. Why? How? They're leaving us all vulnerable. They're so stupid and so forth. I like how Jeff Deist from the Mises Institute says, look, it's time to unmask America, and it's time to get back to normal life with visible human faces. He says enough is enough. It's time to stop wearing masks, or at the very least, to eliminate mask mandates in all settings. Now, this is especially urgent for kids in schools and universities who suffer the effects of masks for long hours each day, despite being at exceedingly low risk for death or serious illness from COVID. He says we have a responsibility, once and for all, to reject the ludicrous, ever-shifting narratives underpinning masks as effective impediments to the spread of COVID infections. And to remind us about that ever-shifting take on it, here's a quote from former U.S. Surgeon General Jerome Adams in February of 2020. Seriously, people, stop buying masks. They are not effective in preventing the general public from catching coronavirus. We haven't heard that in a couple of years, have we? The story changed from masks don't work to masks may work to masks work and you must wear one. Now the narrative switches yet again. Cloth masks don't work, so you should wear a surgical or well-fitted mask, or even wear two. Note that even as COVID evolves into a less dangerous Omicron variant, we're supposed to increase the hysteria level by wearing masks intended for surgeons maintaining a sterile environment over open wounds. We're told this by the same political, medical, and media figures who have frequently been wrong, but never in doubt, about all things COVID over the past two long years. And they spoke with just as much bogus certainty then as they do now. Now, perversely, the Biden administration recently ordered 400 million surgical N95 masks for distribution across the country. Since N95 masks are considered disposable and meant to be worn at most for perhaps 40 hours, it's unclear what happens in a week or two when 330 million Americans run out of their free personal protective equipment. Now, the UK has sensibly ended its mask mandates, both in public places, offices and other workplaces, bars, restaurants, sporting events, theater, and thankfully, schools. One young university student broke down in tears at the news, lamenting the inhumanity of her experience over the past 2 years. As British Health Secretary Savid Javid stated, we must learn to live with COVID in the same way that we live with flu. Amen, says Jeff Deist. The arguments against masks are straightforward. Masks don't work, or at least cloth masks don't. Even the CDC now admits that what Dr. Anthony Fauci told the world in February 2020, cloth masks don't work and there is no reason to wear one. Quote, the typical mask you buy in the drugstore is not really effective in keeping out virus, which is small enough to pass through material. It might, however, provide some slight benefit in keeping out gross droplets if someone coughs or sneezes on you. I do not recommend that you wear a mask, particularly since you are going to a very low-risk location. Now, CNN's dubious medical expert, Dr. Lena Wen, previously an Uber masker, now tells us cloth masks are little more than facial decorations. And heroic skeptic Dr. Jay Bhattacharya cites both a Danish study and a Bangladeshi study, which found cloth masks show little efficacy in preventing COVID. Are we seriously prepared to wear tight, uncomfortable surgical masks all day to evade Omicron? Masks are filthy. Human lungs and respiratory system are designed to inhale nitrogen and oxygen and exhale carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is literally a waste product removed from the blood via our lungs. Masks may not trap injurious levels of carbon dioxide against our nose and mouth, but they certainly get very filthy quickly, unless changed constantly. And they also encourage mouth breathing, which can cause mask mouth symptoms, including acne, bad breath, tender gums, and lip irritation. Why would we ever interfere with natural breathing unless we felt sick, displayed symptoms, and were worried about infecting others? And in that case, why not just stay home? Then there's the fact that masks are dehumanizing. Humans communicate verbally and nonverbally, and masks impede both forms. Masks muffle and distort our words. Our facial expressions are important cues to everyone around us. Those without cues, communication and understanding, communication and understanding suffer. Infants and toddlers may be most affected, as a lack of facial engagement with parents and loved ones impedes the human connections and attachments formed during childhood. And perhaps most disturbing, however, are the symbolic effects when millions of Americans dutifully wear masks based on flimsy evidence provided by deeply unimpressive people. Facelessness, the lack of individual identity, personality, and looks is inherently dehumanizing and dystopian. Like prison or military uniforms, masks reduce our personal characteristics. Masks are muzzles, symbols of rote acquiescence to an ugly new normal that no one asked or voted for. And also, risk is inevitable. Risk is omnipresent and heavily subjective. In other words, COVID risks vary enormously with age and comorbidities. No one has a right to force interventions like masks onto others, just as nobody has a right to a hypothetical germ-free landscape. Exhalation is not aggression, short of purposely attempting to sicken others. People wearing masks arguably shed slightly fewer COVID virus particles than those not, but this doesn't justify banning the latter from public life. As always, the overwhelming burden of justification for any intervention, including mask mandates, must rest on those proposing it, not those opposing it. In sum, Jeff Deist says, Americans are not children. Trade-offs are part of every policy, whether government officials admit this or not. We know how to coexist with flu, just as we live with countless bacteria and viruses in our environment. We will similarly coexist with COVID. The goal is not to eliminate germs, and zero COVID is an absurdity. A healthy immune system built up through exercise, diet, and sunlight will always be the best frontline defense against communicable disease. But diet, exercise, and sunlight cannot be outsourced to health officials or mandated by politicians. So whatever slight benefits masks may provide are a matter for individuals to decide for themselves. People who feel sick with symptoms should stay home. We can all wash our hands frequently and thoroughly. Otherwise, it's time for Americans to assert themselves against the dubious claims and non-existent legality of government COVID measures. It's time to get back to normal life, and that starts with visible human faces. Amen, bro. I've got a link to this article in the show notes at thebrianhydeshow.com. If it strikes the right nerve with you, maybe consider sharing it with the people around you. Stick around. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is The Brian Hyde Show. This is The Brian Hyde Show.
And just like that, we are back. Just want to give a quick shout out once again to lifesavingfood.com. There is a special going on this week that I think you will find worth your time. It is a very comprehensive ultimate solar power and cooking emergency food kit. And it includes a water filter, very powerful water filter, lots of meals, a solar device charger, a stove, a fire starter, and a whole lot more. You can save $232 on this kit. That's a 28% savings. But I'm telling you, this is comprehensive. It's really good stuff. Whether you have to grab and go or stay put and weather out some kind of an emergency, I think this would be worth your time. Click on the link I provide in my show notes at thebrianhydeshow.com. That's lifesavingfood.com. So there's a guy I follow by the name of Kurt Mercadante. In fact, I'm going to have him on the show here at some point in the near future, just because Kurt is just one of those great influences out there. And constantly reminding me through the day, I check my Twitter feed and I see things that he shares that are just so pertinent to people for whom freedom is a priority. One of the things that he talks about is how we tend to find more of the things upon which we focus, which means if you're exclusively focused on the negativity, the evil, the darkness that is surrounding us, you're going to invite more darkness and evil into your life. So if you don't want to focus on the negative, you know, or if you want to bring more negativity in your life, simple, focus on the negative. On the other hand, if you focus on things that are good, that are edifying, don't be surprised if you experience more of those kinds of things. Got a great article here from Andrew E. Herod talking about what is heroic virtue. And since, we all could use a little more courage, a little more goodness. And we could all stand to do more to promote that in the world around us. I thought this might be a fun exploration. Our culture has a very confused sense of heroism, often applauding the biggest, strongest, loudest, or wealthiest, writes Catholic commentator Bear Wozniak in his new book, Deep Adventure, The Way of Heroic Virtue. Now, in response to this distortion, he's drawn upon his own daring life of surfing Hawaii's waves and skydiving and running with the bulls in Pamplona, Spain. to examine insightfully the seven cardinal virtues. Wozniak counters the modern exaltation of braggadocio with courage's mundane basis, saying, true heroism, the kind that saves lives, preserves dignity, and protects the most vulnerable, is a determined, steadfast power, under control and directed toward the good with the clarity of purpose that comes with humility. Oh, that's a good definition. Heroism is developed over time, one decision after another, moment by moment, formed by a deliberate, chosen, and habitual response to life. Now, Wozniak clarifies, heroes are not made by a spider's bite or on an alien planet. A hero is just a common person, like you and me, choosing to do an uncommon thing. Virtue forms such a hero. As Wozniak notes, its root in the Latin word vir, which means manly. True manliness is the pursuit of virtue. And justice stands at the beginning of Wozniak's analysis of the virtues. Quote, the virtue of justice in its classic sense has two focuses, justice toward God and justice toward others. Think of the vertical beam of the cross as being justice toward God and the horizontal beam as justice toward others. Where the beams intersect is where we are called to live. End quote. Prudence, meanwhile, vitally concerns the surfer Wozniak. Many people think big wave riders have a death wish, but he says the opposite is true. Their go-for-it attitude is really a life wish. They want to live it to the fullest. Without prudence, we cannot fully experience God's plan for us. Without prudence, we are lost beneath the crushing waves, or worse, left sunning ourselves on the shores of mediocrity. Wozniak analyzes, abandoning yourself to God's will requires a prudent boldness. If you're just going to stay inside your comfort zone, you don't need prudence at all. You just need a footrest. Ooh, smack. Now, Wozniak wisely distinguishes between earthly and heavenly desires in his discussion of temperance. Listen to this. The virtue of temperance is the self-mastery to enjoy pleasure without craving it. It is by moderating our appetites so that we control them instead of them controlling us. Now, by contrast, the only thing we can infinitely desire is an infinite being, namely God. If we desire God first and foremost, we will never fall into the trap of wanting more. Fortitude is the determined pursuit of the good, Wozniak writes as he reaches the last of the natural virtues, and is the courage to do violence to our own weak will and to say no to the easy way that leads to defeat. Faith in God creates fortitude's foundation, for can there be any fear when we are with God? God is love, and perfect love casts out fear. And Wozniak observes, I know that whether I live or die or push forward in prolonged suffering, God is with me. I mean, I got to pause for a moment and just say, these are some really great insights, and every one of them rings true to me. Now, from fortitude, Wozniak transitions to the supernatural or theological virtues, beginning with faith. Faith is dynamic, like a pent-up energy wanting to explode. Faith without action is dead, he intriguingly states. For God is calling you to continually move out in faith. He's calling you to do the impossible every day. Every time I jump out of a plane, he says, I feel the same rush that I feel when I take a leap of faith in response to God. Jesus challenged Peter to exercise his faith and step out of the boat. True faith banishes worry and demands a confident Sabbath rest amidst God's security. Wozniak explains, when we worry, we're actually trying to exert our will over his. Making anything other than God and his will our goal is ultimately idolatry. So he says, trust, rest, and try easy is his motto. Hope arises out of the deep desire for God, the yearning to connect with beauty, to intimately share our lives with someone, and to seek perfection comes from the very core of our being because it is actually the deep longing for intimacy with our Creator. Accordingly, to pursue that longing, to seek the knowledge of God, is to have the virtue of hope. Hope entails giving control to God. Wozniak writes, once we've turned our back on the land and abandoned our will to God's, we've given up all control. Even so, we wait in hope and prayer for the presence of the Lord. Now, Wozniak concludes with a similarly energetic feeling or understanding of love, rather. Love isn't about feelings, he says. Who has warm and fuzzy feelings for an enemy? No, love is about action. It is the committed desire for the good of another and enacting it. He writes, Jesus commands us to make the choice of love even for those who don't deserve it, in our opinions. As with Woznik's pious mother in her long deathbed struggles, love often involves suffering. And he points to God's wrestling with Jacob in the Old Testament as an example. If we desire true intimacy with God, we can expect that there will be times when God will drive us into the dark night and will wrestle with us as we try to cling to the world, the flesh, and the devil. Pretty good stuff here. The ocean blue provides the perfect setting for Woznik's journey ever deeper into the wild and untamable adventure of God's love. Woznik's penetrating study of the seven cardinal virtues shows they are not the stuff of mere academic discussions, but principles for a life well examined and well lived. Woznik will not leave readers in their armchairs the same. Again, this is a review of Woznik's book, Deep Adventure, The Way of Heroic Virtue, from Andrew E. Herod. And perhaps for some, it's a little too religious, Brian. Come on, man, you're off in the weeds. And look, maybe that's not the message you needed to hear today, but I promise you, there's someone within the sound of my voice who is trying to find the courage to stand up and live up to the virtues that they know are ennobling and empowering in their lives. So for them, you know, that's why I deliver this message. Look, I want to swing for the fences every single time I sit down and open this microphone. And there's some days where I get done and I'm like, wow, that's, you know, today's show went really well. Or I felt like I was in sync with whatever I was supposed to be doing. But there's times where it's like, yeah, I don't know. And strangely enough, some of the shows that I pass off as, wow, that one kind of sucked, or I really felt like I swung and missed on it. Those are sometimes the times when I hear back from people and say, I just so appreciate, you know, that you shared this, or that you had this person on your show, or you helped me understand something. So I never know. But something I do want you to understand about this program, as much as I would love to have the biggest, baddest audience in the entire world, it's not about having the biggest audience. You know, I understand that the message I have is not something that everybody wants or even what everybody needs. But for the people out there who are looking for more truth, more light, more understanding of what they can do to make the difference they need to make in the world around them, well, if you're one of those people, you're the reason why I do this on a daily basis and count myself blessed for the opportunity to do so. Thank you for being part of this audience.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.